Chapter 18.
Kali's blood!
Peric swore, striding confidently across Lux Bridge toward Dorian.
That was rather impressive. Who are you?
His eyes took in Janine, but dismissed her.
It's all right,
Dorian told Janine, though it wasn't. He'd destroyed a few teenage boys who had underestimated him. Peric or Sul was a man in the prime of his powers. And he was fresh, and he had 6 battle-hardened Verdmeisters backing him. One of the Verdmeisters whispered in Peric's ear. Peric straightened.
No, surely not Dorian.
He stepped forward, and Dorian stepped forward as well, not willing to let Peric reach the end of Lux Bridge unchallenged. Peric smirked. Seeing that smirk, Dorian hated him, despised him, wanted to crush him.
I am Dorian,
Dorian said defiantly. 6 Verdmeisters and Peric. Damn it! He only wanted to leave. The dark clouds overhead rushed past, coldly impartial.
We thought you long dead, brother, Peric said. A mistake we shall soon remedy.
Dorian lashed out with Veer and Talent both, splitting the weaves to sweep the Verdmeisters off the bridge, and at the same time yanking at the magical underpinnings to drop the bridge into the abyss. They rebuffed the attacks with ease. Even with the Amplifiae, Dorian was no match for 7 Verdmeisters together.
Brother, brother, Peric admonished. This bridge will not drop a Trueborn or Sul.
He laughed, and skulls embedded in Lux Bridge seemed to laugh with him, their eyes glowing with magical fire.
Indeed, if any of Gareth's sons were in danger, it would be you, Dorian, the mage trained.
That's what I'm counting on, Dorian said.
He stepped forward, out of the shoe he had cut free with his talent, and put one bare foot on the bridge. There was a flash as the last quarter of the bridge sensed a magus and unraveled. Peric screamed, falling with a shower of skulls that laughed no longer. He and the Verdmeisters plummeted down and down. They flung Veer at the distant walls, hoping to catch themselves, but the walls themselves were bespelled to deny magic purchase. The Verdmeisters passed out of sight into the thick, foul clouds of the abyss. Dorian could sense their magic for several more seconds, trying anything, everything, desperately. Then they winked out, all at the same time. Before them, Lux Bridge reformed itself. Dorian stepped back into his lead-lined shoe and tested it on the bridge. It flared green and began to turn transparent. He had simply used too much talent too recently for the thin defense of the lead plating to be adequate. So he stretched the Veer forth once more and reached under the bridge to steady it.
We must go quickly, he told Janine. Stay close.
She nodded, biting her lip. By the god, she was beautiful. She was worth it. Dorian stepped onto Lux Bridge, and it held. It was even more eerie, he thought, to walk across the span without the skulls. Looking at the harmless skulls of the dead scared him less than looking at the clouds far beneath his feet. In moments, they made the crossing. The guards, standing at the gatekeep, gaped and dropped to their knees. Dorian recognized Rugger.
I'm sorry, he said.
Rugger looked up, sure he was about to die. Dorian healed the man's wen with a touch. Without the ugly protuberance, Rugger wasn't half bad looking. Rugger's hands went to his forehead, disbelieving. Hand in hand, Dorian and Janine stepped through the iron portcullis and looked over the city from their perch. Peric's army wound through the city and out onto the plain. The front of it was just beginning the climb up the ridge where Dorian and Janine stood. The men and women on the leading edge weren't soldiers. They were Meisters and Verdmeisters, 200 strong, and they were already halfway to Dorian. They couldn't help but have been aware of the magical firestorm he'd just been part of. Every one of them had their eyes fixed on him.
"Are we going to die?"
Janine asked.
"No,"
Dorian said.
"These people have lived under tyranny so long, they have no idea what to do after you've killed their leader. One more bluff, and we're on our way home."
"What home is that, Dorian?"
"You really think you can bluff that?"
Janine asked, pointing to the entire army. Dorian smiled, and he realized how long it had been since he'd thought about the future. He was no prophet now, but yes, he was sure. He was about to gamble it all for one last time. A few orders, a few curses, maybe a few deaths, and he and Janine would be on their way to Cenaria. It would work. It could, anyway. Something cold touched his cheek. Dorian blinked.
"What?"
Janine asked, seeing the hope die in his face.
"What's wrong?"
She followed his eyes up.
"It's snowing,"
he said softly.
"The passes will be closed. We're trapped."
In the distance, barely audible beneath the hiss of falling snow, Dorian thought he heard Kali laughing. Snow made the worst weather for invisibility. In Cenaria, snow usually melted as soon as it hit the ground. But tonight, it was sticking long enough to show footprints. The sleet itself gave shape to Kylar's body as it ran down his limbs. Kylar had to move as slowly toward the Siurin camp as if he were an assassin. At least, he still remembered how to sneak. And at least the clouds blocked the moon. Still, it was cold. As usual, Kylar was only wearing underclothes beneath the kakari, and it wasn't enough. He tugged at his earring, pushing down the distant awareness of Vi. Shivering, Kylar climbed a rocky knoll to get a better view. The Siurins had four men camped on the windy hill, huddled around a banked fire with oil-soaked torches nearby so they could give signals to the army below. Kylar sat 5 paces from a weary sentry. The man was a peasant foot soldier rather than a Sa-Siurai. His armor was made of plates sewn onto fabric. Rather than being fastened with leather, which was durable but would harden and shrink if it got wet too often, Siurins usually fastened their armor with ruinously expensive Lodrakari silk laces. After the Battle of Pavil's Grove, Garawashi's plan had been to pull the Cenarian army east after his Caladoran raiders, while the main strength of his own army swept behind them and took the capital. It would have worked, but for something he never could have foreseen. Walls. Most of Cenaria's old walls had been cannibalized for their stones. By the time Kylar was a child, generations of rabbits, too poor to pay for masonry, had finally left the Warrens without walls. The richer east side had seen a similar, if slower, erosion. But in the last few months while Kylar was gone, walls had appeared around the entire city. It was breathtaking. With Cenaria's endemic corruption, it would have taken 5 generations of kings and millions of crowns to equal what Gareth or Sul's cruelty and magic had done in 2 months. Of course, he'd also had a ready supply of stone from all the houses Tara Grayson's followers had abandoned, and when those ran out, they simply demolished more homes and took what they needed. Now, the Siouran army was laid out in a crescent hugging the south and east of the city. On finding walls, Garawashi's generals had prepared a siege until their leader could join them, which he had by now. The west side of the city was an alternately boggy and rocky peninsula that held the warrens. West of that was the ocean. North of the city were mountains and only one crossing of the Plith River. Garawashi had contented himself with burning that bridge so he could concentrate his forces on the east side of the Plith and the two gates he would probably assault. Garawashi's army camped like raiders Kylar had seen at the edge of Ezra's wood. Tents made up a grid pattern, with small streets separating the tents and wider streets between platoons. Commanders' tents at regular intervals, couriers' tents next to those, and latrines and fires laid out with precision. What they didn't have were wagons. Whatever tunnels the Siourans had taken were evidently not big enough, or too steep, or too claustrophobic for horses. Garawashi had sacrificed everything for speed. The war leader himself had probably only caught up to his army in time to see the horror of the walls for himself. And now, it was snowing. This was not going to be a protracted siege. When Tara Grayson had left Cenaria, those who had followed her had put their possessions to the torch to keep them from falling into Caladoran hands. How many granaries had gone up in those fires? Perhaps a better question was, how many bakeries and mills and warehouses were left? For their part, Lantano Garawashi's men had the freedom of movement, but all the crops had been taken into the city long ago. Lantano's men could raid villages a few days out, but without horses, they couldn't bring the food back quickly, and they could only bring what they could carry. Even if they stole horses and built a few wagons, that would take time, and they had an entire army to feed. Each side was going to be absolutely desperate within days. Logan's force outside the walls wasn't likely to do much to sway the balance, not without communication with Tara Grayson. If they could tell the Queen to hold on and not do anything stupid, Logan could use his cavalry to destroy any attempts Garawashi made at foraging. In a standoff involving 13,000 foot soldiers, a few hundred horses could make all the difference. If Tara didn't do anything stupid, which meant someone needed to talk to her.
Someone? Let me guess.
Kylar had 6 hours until dawn. It was going to be a busy night. Before he left, just for fun, he tied the silk laces of the sentry's leggings together.